From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of May 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Jonathan Kappas, agricultural policy specialist from here on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign, will join us to take a look at this morning's vote on the farm bill. It failed. He'll tell us why and what the path forward may or may not be. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss what's going to happen in the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He is at Agrible, and we'll do all of that on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you again, Todd. Thanks for having me, sir.
Hey, wheat must lead. Well, and we're going to put a lot of hopes on this one at some point, I think. It was a big day in the wheat pit in Chicago.
It was a big day, and it was also a big cyclical week because we've had a very strong seasonal tendency and cyclical tendency in hard red wheat for about a 4 to 5 month low to low mindset in the lead month chart. And we had made a low in late January, and we were testing a major trend line this week. And if you look at the hard red wheat and not the soft red wheat, you can see quite a bit of a distinction where we opened lower on the week and outside week lower to start the week off, testing a trend line, and then the weather came in. And I think bottom line, Todd, with all the negative trade news and a little bit of help from the corn in terms of the sorghum tariff being lifted by China and a big cut by Safras in the corn crop down in Brazil, I think the door was open for the wheat. So now hard red wheat is poised to try and test that 547 and a quarter, I think, level, 547 and a half level from May. If it can do better than that, then we'd be looking at that mid-July high of last year of 557 and a quarter. And I don't know if we can get much better than that, given that the radar looks and the weather models are getting wetter for the southern plains as we get into the middle of next week. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. But wheat sure helped a lot this week. You're right about that.
Sure did on the macroeconomic side. No deal on NAFTA at this point. No deal with China either.
No, and the currency showed it. I mean, the Mexican peso had a new 14-month low. Argentina is looking at maybe needing emergency funds by the IMF. That's a two-edged sword, but to your macro point, it didn't get better. It got worse over the macro side, and the trade issues got worse, you know. While we saw the trade help on the sorghum tariffs being removed, we also saw cancellations of about 950,000 tons of beans this morning, and it was unknown, but I think the trade assumes it was China. So you've got a situation where with both NAFTA and the U.S.-China negotiations, we didn't move the football down the field, and you know we are running out of time, and the export sales showed that. Just to give the listener an idea, year-to-date commitments right now on the beans are down 3%, and had it not been for the meal year to date being up 13% thanks to Argentina's drought, we'd be, I think, a lot lower in the soybeans right now. And corn, we're steady with last year with 36 weeks in the marketing year now passed. Wheat still down about 16%, but here again, USDA is down 12% versus last year. So we're not that far behind last year, but we really need these trade deals. And I know I sound like a broken record each Friday, but it gets more important as time goes on because we're losing our marketing year window here.
Yeah, so more volatility yet to come based on what's happening in Washington, D.C. Weather around the planet has been playing a pretty big role. Did I see that the Brazilian second crop corn got cut in size again?
Yeah, that's what Safras cut it by 15% versus last month. They're on track for a sub 49 million ton crop. That would put you at a total of 79 million for the Brazilian production. That would put you, this is compared to 108 million tons last year. And so that would put you on track for a number that the trade is not ready for, because I think USDA came out with 85 or 87 just a week and a half ago. So this, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this market is still poised and set up for a trade where you buy corn and sell beans. However, if the wheat and the corn were somehow able to surpass some of these resistance levels in the hard red wheat, and we missed some rains in the central corn belt because this last 10 days of rain has been very, very light, if anything, in Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and southern Iowa. If we could put together a little bit more weather in the next 10 days, we may see a situation where the beans are just literally pulled up by the wheat and the corn. I guess when I look at it in a totality, Todd, and you look at the Brazil corn crop, I think you have better chances for getting rallies to sell on corn and on wheat. But I'm still a seller because the demand looks so poor from a standpoint of the currencies and the trade negotiations and the fact that the higher we go now, the more we'll probably ration demand.
What else do we have to discuss for the day?
Probably the other thing to look at is the cattle and hog market. We saw this week again how they're starting to lead the sentiment. It's not just about the currencies, but we saw the hogs fall out of bed. They gave up their gains for the week coming into this morning. We were up on the hogs and we gave all that back today. I think that pork and bean trade is still very much alive and kicking. So I continue to use the livestock as kind of a canary in the coal mine when it comes to whether we are near an end to the negative bias in the trade. So my sentiment is continue to hedge futures, continue to hedge paper positions. If you find yourself in a bad weather spot, keep that in mind and be very leery about selling cash and be very knowledgeable about your basis and find somebody that knows about it as well.
Do you have an idea at all? I'm trying to look it up. That's why I asked you kind of that open-end question. On the Brazilian second crop corn, how big their corn crop was, I think it would have been the 2014-15 year or whichever short year that was, how big it was by comparison.
Yeah, I want to say it was right around 48 to 50. So I think we're down there because last year they did 58.5. And so I want to say we were a good 8, maybe 9 million tons less than that in 14-15, and that's an important year to watch because if we do have a short wheat crop and a short corn crop, you can keep prices elevated, but it doesn't mean you're going to stretch your legs to what we would be expecting because of the demand side of the equation and the trade issues. So that's where it's smart to really stay on top of the basis, especially if you find yourself in a dry hole of weather like we have right now and from central Illinois to central Missouri.
Any final word before I let you go for the day?
Just have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. We're now joined by Jonathan Kappas. What a morning it was in Washington, D.C. The Farm Bill came up, H.R. 2, in the House of Representatives, and it failed. This has happened before with 2014, but I take it this is wholly different than what's happened in the past.
Yeah, well, this is a tough morning for the Farm Bill, for the Ag Community, the Ag Committees. It has happened before. There's a bit of deja vu about this. In 2013, after a partisan fight over the SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the House of Representatives defeated a Farm Bill on the House floor. By my count, that's the first time it happened since 1962. And it's a pretty big defeat. This farm bill has been in trouble from day one because this was a partisan farm bill, largely about the SNAP program again. Although there were some bipartisan concerns about the way the farm programs were set up, so it wasn't just a SNAP issue. But the SNAP issue was the dominant political issue. And then this morning, by all accounts, a group of Republican members of the House, in a protest vote because they're not getting a vote on a hardline immigration bill that they want to get a vote on, voted against the farm bill and sunk it. And all Democrats voted against it. A good portion of Republicans, I think 30 was the count, 30 something, voted against it and defeated the bill on the floor. So we are at a similar result as what we saw in June of 2013, but for different reasons and with a whole lot of other challenging political aspects about it. So the path ahead does not become immediately apparent unless you think that the speaker is going to bring an immigration, a very divisive, very controversial immigration bill up for a vote and then come back to the farm bill after that, presuming that will change some of the 30 votes that they lost.
So it sure looks like this complicates the farm bill's path forward as it relates to getting votes, because now it's about the farm bill and a separate bill, the immigration legislation put forward by the chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the complications that adds to a farm bill are tough to get your head around, and it makes for a it raises a whole lot more questions than it provides answers as to what that means in the House, what that means in the Senate, how these things begin to play out now. If we're starting to watch effective sort of hostage taking on the farm bill over immigration, does that empower further challenges over this issue? I think one of the things we got to come back to that is really key about this, and you and I talked about this when it came out of the committee, that it was really disturbing to watch at the House Ag Committee break down on purely partisan lines and the negotiations break down, and they jam out, they push out this bill without any Democratic support. Now we see the part of the results down the floor without that broader coalition. Now a small faction of, and this is not a majority of the Republicans in Congress, it's a small group of Republicans in Congress who are holding this bill hostage, but they're able to do that, right? The only way they have that power on the House floor is that the Ag Committee did not follow the traditional route of being bipartisan, working through these policy solutions on a bipartisan basis, and they picked a fight over SNAP that frankly remains hard to understand and fully grasp, and it's frustrating to see this go down.
Let me see if I can summarize what happened. The Farm Bill coming out of committee was not bipartisan because the Democrats were not on board with the work requirements that the Republicans wanted. That came to the floor for a vote today. However, part of the Republican Party, the Freedom Caucus, saw an opportunity in the split between the parties to hold hostage the Farm Bill in order to get a vote on a piece of immigration legislation that it would like. This has happened, of course, before in the 2014 bill, but it was only inside the Farm Bill legislation, not two different pieces of legislation then.
I say this is the second straight time that the House has defeated a Farm Bill on the House floor, a Farm Bill brought out of committee. The only thing that passed in 2013 was when they broke the two apart, and that was done by leadership. Majority Leader Cantor at the time broke them apart and went far, one did the SNAP nutrition title separate. So this is twice in a row, and this is the kind of political outcome that we've long feared was building against this workable coalition. Whether they find another path through or not, you know, that's a question to be seen. But yeah, I think your summary's right. What happened this morning was the vote on final passage, the vote by the House of Representatives to pass the Farm Bill failed. And it failed with the votes against it coming. All Democrats voted against it, and a significant portion of enough Republicans, most of them aligned with the Freedom Caucus, voted against it and brought it down.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
That's Jonathan Kappas. He's an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. After we recorded our programming, he went back and did some counting of the votes, then sent me a note and said, hey, vote counting 101, 14 of those votes against the Farm Bill came from the Freedom Caucus, 16 of the Republican no votes were from moderate Republicans, so that should add to the complexity of how this moves forward as well. Eric Snodgrass now joins us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the weather forecast. Eric, where should we start today?
Well, Todd, what I think we should be talking about here is the fact that over the last few weeks, we've really seen a summer-type pattern set up. And what I mean by that is we've seen a lot of shower and thunderstorm activity across Illinois, across Indiana, but we've had some fields that have been completely missed by these recent rains. So it's interesting. I'll see some farmers talking about how they've had flash flooding. They've got standing water in their fields here in Illinois. And then I'll hear of other farmers who talk about how they haven't gotten anything. We've actually had a flash drought situation set up where the top couple of inches have dried out simply because we've had some stronger winds. We've had temperatures that have been in the upper 80s, even a day in the lower 90s. And that basically can dry out that soil very, very quickly. So it's been an interesting start to our planting time period because we've made such progress over the last few weeks of getting everything planted. Well, what I have to watch in the next couple of days is this. We've been discussing this tropical feature that's coming up out of the southeastern United States heading toward the northeast, and it has brought in enough moisture that on the western side of that, Well, that moisture is finally interacting with the with the eastern corn belt. So I'm talking about Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, which means we might be seeing some flow over the next 24 to 36 hours that comes out of the east, which means our storms, our precipitation is coming out of the east. And what I would love to see is a couple of these weather systems kind of moving through, bringing in a big blanket of precipitation. Let's get a good rain on this crop right now that, you know, the crop that's in the ground needs a good soaking rain at this time of the year to really help it out. So we'll be watching that basically next 12, let's call it 24 hours. When we get into the day on Saturday, there might be parts, especially of western Illinois, that get a chance to kind of dry back out. And then we're going to be watching the system coming in from the west on Sunday. So right now we have in the middle part of Kansas a low pressure system emerging. It will be bringing a lot of severe weather to the high plains and then a good soaking rain to parts of Nebraska and South Dakota, two regions that actually do need the precipitation. Now, while Nebraska is ahead on planting, South Dakota is not. So it's an interesting trade-off. They actually want this rain because there's still some residual drought in that area from last year. They want this rain, but at the same time, they'd like to get this crop planted. Well, that system lighting up the northern plains and the central plains today with severe weather is going to move toward us on Sunday.
Have you been looking further ahead, say maybe through the whole of the next month or 30 days or so?
I don't really see us breaking down out of this warmer pattern. We're kind of in a warm pattern with these two troughs that are kind of flanking North America, one near Greenland and one near Alaska, and that's allowing for some heat to build into our area. Now, this is really a summer-like pattern, and as a consequence, more of these hit-or-miss showers and thunderstorms are going to be kind of the rule that we're going to have to be following here over the next, maybe up to the next 30 days. It looks as though planting, our early start of our season, not only planting, but the early start of the growing season here is going to feature a pretty rapid accumulation of growing degree units. And if we talk about when the crop was planted here in central Illinois, that may mean a first week of July pollination time period, which means we're going to have to watch that time very, very carefully. Also, you know, we've been talking about the long-range summer outlooks, and I'll tell you, I've not seen too much of an adjustment in the recent model runs that have come out, which means I still think we're going to have a warmer than average summer around here, but I think most of the heat's going to be confined to the central plains and like the Pacific Northwest. And that means it will be very important for us to watch by mid-June where the ridge sets up. And if it tends to favor more of a western position, that's great for Illinois weather. That's great for Illinois corn and soybeans because we get some northwest flow aloft and quite a bit of thunderstorms. Now, that's just an idea. I'll have to watch it very, very carefully to see how it does eventually evolve.
What about weather around the rest of the world?
I'll mention Argentina first. They have finally started to dry out after a very, very wet last 15 to 25 days, which has really impacted the harvest of their crops. And also points north of there where we've seen really, really dry conditions in parts of Brazil's southern growing regions and also in Mato Grosso. We have seen recently that some precipitation moved back into the area, but it's probably not enough to completely revive that crop and get them back toward big yields. So we've seen the USDA kind of lower estimates in that region because of that. And also I want to talk about Canada. We know that parts of Manitoba, parts of Saskatchewan, and parts of Ontario have been quite dry. We will get some rains out of this system that's coming through right now in southern Manitoba, but this isn't going to be enough to kind of save the situation in that area. So we've got a lot to be watching over the coming weeks, and I'm glad we talk once a week so that we can kind of get the bigger picture filled in here.
Me too. Hey, thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.